accountable action or inaction. The choice is simple. The execution is a struggle. It's the simple law of delegation. In a moment, one can delegate a task. But the one whom receives the delegated task to do may labor for an extended period of time in order to produce the expected result by the one who did the delegation. One can easily think of a project that has many parts. Each part is required to be completed before the project is completed, and some parts may be dependent upon other parts before they can be completed. But when the project is done, it looks like something that is very simple. If one has ever been involved in the preparation of a tax return, especially a complex one, there might be schedules and subschedules and subschedules to the subschedules in order for the tax return to be completed. Yet the tax return could consist of just a few pages compared to the large volume of papers that are required in order to get to that end result. Accountable action refers to the conduct and the procedure, the principle that one may follow in order to make the most productive use of one's time. Mary Baker Eddy has stated that the difference between success and failure depends more on the moments than anything else. How does one use their moments? Noah Webster, in his 1828 dictionary, a moment is defined as the most minute and indivisible part of time, an instant. Accountable action refers to utilizing the moments toward the desired goal. There are so many moments that are usually wasted that it's not difficult to think about compounding those moments into a large number. And if those moments, instead of being wasted, were productively utilized, it's not that difficult to see why Mary Baker Eddy stated what she did about how one utilizes their moments determines the difference between success and failure. And the more moments that are utilized for thinking about the qualities of God and how man reflects those qualities, that certainly could be a very substantial asset in adding to the store of value in one's consciousness. Accountable action refers to anything whereby one is comparing one thing to a standard that has been established for that one thing. This is not so much as a standard that has been established by something exterior to one's own consciousness as to what has been established within one's own consciousness. If one has an appointment and fails to be there and makes no effort to communicate to anyone else that may be involved in that appointment, if one has a good standard of truth within their own consciousness, the biggest disappointment involved should be to one's self. Certainly in consideration of other people, they should be contacted, and they probably will not be so disappointed if there is communication. But the biggest thing is to have a standard within oneself so that one is accountable for commitments. If the one dominating standard are based on the qualities of God, which simply put are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and those are thought of as being incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite, then a standard that cannot be penetrated by anything superior to it has been established. In the beginning of the recording, it was indicated that looking at the options of whether or not one is going to choose a path of accountability or not is on the surface easy to view as a group of words, but the execution is an entirely different matter. Execution is filled with challenges, conflicts, discords. The reason is simply this. Mary Baker Eddy, when she was writing the first edition of Science and Health, which was finally published in 1875, seemed to have an impossible task of getting it published. She had been delivering to the publisher the various parts, but she couldn't seem to get the end product published by him, all the parts she had given him. And it wasn't until she listened more intently and discovered that she needed one additional chapter. And it was on the topic of animal magnetism. What she discovered was that when one is trying to accomplish goodness in some way, in other words, following the Christ consciousness, following a standard of the seven synonymous terms of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, when one tries to follow that standard of those qualities, there seems to be working right alongside of the effort a force which prevents one from following that standard of those qualities. The Klingbeil family, which consisted of the father and a daughter and a son that were working together on this project that was deemed to be the topic of how prayer is most effective. What are the elements of prayer that would make it a most effective prayer? The father was gifted with a spiritual nature which enabled him to be very successful in his prayerful work for his patients, and then has his family, which consisted of the son and the daughter, matured in age and got more involved in his father's efforts. They did very methodical work praying for seeds, such as a farmer might do, or a gardener, to see how effective prayer would be when it was linked to the success of the seeds. This project, called the Seed Project, was extremely revealing. But in essence, they included participants from all religions and all types of prayer. One major category was prayer that was directed to the seeds that were the subject. And another type was unrelated to the seeds that were the subject. And without going into the details, for that was a multi-decade research project, it will just be quickly summarized in a few words by stating that the sincerity of the one praying and getting self out of the way and objects out of the way brought the best results. Mary Baker Eddy has stated that when she got Mary, meaning herself, out of the way, that brought her the most phenomenal results. And then she describes the serious nature of a couple problems in particular as an example. Debbie was the daughter, and she devoted her life to furthering the research that had been carried on by her father and then the three of them together. And one very important part of that research that she did discovered in detail, as proven by the methodical method in which she conducted her research, that the human mind, to belief, has a built-in mechanism which is self-defensive, meaning that whatever the human mind believes, it defends that position and is extremely resistant to any change. In other words, whatever the human mind has accepted as truth, it defends that position to no end. And the very sad and elusive part about all this is that this is done unconsciously. One might make a major mistake in doing something that one might think would be simple to avoid the mistake and doing it correctly. And one might say, I can't believe I did that. How could I be so stupid? Or some other derogatory term that would express total disgust with one's own actions. If one studies the research that Debbie Klingbeil did, they would further understand how it all came about. And of course, Mary Baker Eddy, in her textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, as well as her other writings, certainly covers the topic, but does not include the scientific research through various methods to determine how it happens. And that is the work that the Klingbeil family did. Mary Baker Eddy made the statement that science is too vast to close the door and say there is nothing else to learn except what is in my textbook. And she has made the specific statement that science and health can be better understood when they read her other writings. She also indicated that it would be another 50 years before people would be able to open the door and get a better understanding of the works that she had written. And so she is leaving the door open for other sincere students to be elaborating on the textbook and the ideas that are brought forth from her phenomenal and comprehensive work, which, as she describes, came directly from God, as she was only a scribe under orders. But obviously she was extremely spiritually minded, or she would not have been able to hear what the divine mind was dictating to her. Debbie Klingbeil, in her research, discovered just how tricky and deceptive the human mind is in its operation, and also that this is mostly done unconsciously, where one is not aware of the workings that are going on behind the scenes, and therefore do not even realize they need to address this unconscious thought. And of course, much of this comes from universal belief. As Mary Baker Eddy describes, that it was lie upon lie that has been compounded into what is affecting humanity. The media, when they publish a false story for the sole purpose of misleading the public, they are putting that false story and the thoughts that go with it out into the atmosphere of thought. And if one is passive and not actively thinking about the qualities of God when they are confronted with a news story or an announcement of opinion, which of course is usually not announced, it is given without warning and it is stated as fact, but this all is going into the atmosphere of thought. And if one does not specifically guard against it, then they are opening their thought to receiving and accepting it as truth and acting upon the basis that it is truth, that it is the fact, and that it is reality, when in fact it is the opposite. And in today's times, where we have instant communication worldwide, at least in nearly every location, then it is very easy for the wrong element to be influencing thought erroneously. And even the messenger may not realize what is happening. The messenger, which may be referred to as a newscaster, or one that has done research on a particular topic, as opposed to one that is just announcing the news. But whatever the case may be, the messenger often is unaware of what they are doing, because they have also been mesmerized by lie upon lie and are pretty much expecting the same line of thought to continue throughout their broadcasting of a topic. They may have a series that is a topic that is covered over a period of days or even longer, and they are just expecting it to continue to lead along the same line. May not realize how totally false that line of thinking that is being shown to them really is. Well, Debbie Klingbeil proved through her research that this defense of mortal mind, the human thought, totally defeats spiritual progress of an individual if one doesn't take active steps to neutralize, stop, and totally reverse the action of this so-called involuntary consciousness. Mary Baker Eddy states very clearly that there can be no mortal mind because mind is immortal. And she labels it an oxymoron. It's like saying, oh, the color of this is black-white. Well, there is no such color as black-white. Black and white together make a third color called gray. And all colors combined, believe it or not, produce the color white, which doesn't make any logical sense, for white is considered purity, and yet how can you end up with white when black is mixed with it? But that's exactly the truth. And black, instead of being a color, is the absence of light, the absence of purity. So it's not a color, it's the absence of it. Like in a room, when one turns on the light, it reverses the absence of light. When there is no light, let's say it's a sealed room with no windows or anything where light can penetrate into it, then a sealed room without light in it is absent of light. It is not dark, for dark is only a term that means the absence of light. So darkness is not a fact, it's only a term to describe the absence of fact, which is light. Our human consciousness, so-called, if it is absent of truth, then it operates on a framework of error, mistakes. If our thought is absent of principle, it operates on chaos. If it's absent of mind, the one and only infinite, incorporeal, divine, and supreme mind, then it operates on ignorance, on the absence of wisdom, on the absence of knowing. For the qualities of intelligence and wisdom and knowing are the reality of mind. And so if we are not letting those permeate our thought, speech, and action, then we're operating on the absence thereof, which is their so-called opposites. Ignorance is only an absence of truth. A stupid mistake is the absence of intelligent action. It doesn't mean intelligent action is missing. It's only that we are not utilizing what is omnipresent. The quality of creativity, enlightenment, is like the engine that starts the process of development in any topic one would want to consider. So once one is enlightened with a new idea, that perpetuates action. But if the action is not combined with the intelligence and the wisdom and the knowing about that topic, then the result is not going to be favorable. But if it is, then there will be accomplishment. So one quality works with other qualities to bring about a success. So once there is accomplishment by utilizing the intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, which is omnipresent, but we just were unaware of it, then there is accomplishment, and the measurement of accomplishment is called power. So that's the source of power. Creativity, which is combined with intelligence, wisdom, and knowing into an action that includes those qualities, and that brings about accomplishment or success. And of course, there's many other qualities that are involved. One has to have the quality of real substance, which is spirit. One needs to be utilizing the spiritual senses, which are soul. So all seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling must be from the lens of spirit, as opposed from a material sense of things. For example, if one is working on a project and they expect that project to yield a certain amount of dollars, or maybe so much that one doesn't even have any idea what the limit is, if there is a limit to it, then there's a high likelihood that that project will fail. Because instead of looking at spiritual senses, it's looking at material senses, matter, money, or whatever, you know, a big house, or control of other people, or some other ungodlike activity, or object that is the focus. Just briefly, the other qualities that are required for success would include principle, which is the fourth quality of God in the order of the days of creation, as outlined in Genesis 1 and the first part of Genesis 2. So we have mind, spirit, and soul, and then fourth is principle, which is the operation. It's the system and structure. Without a structure, and that structure needs to be reflecting the qualities just mentioned of intelligence, wisdom, knowing. It has to be of the substance of spirit. We have to be utilizing the spiritual senses all the way through for guidance. and identification, proper identification and recognition. So principal must be an intelligent and knowing and wise operation. The structure has to be built not on sand on the beach where a wave can come along and wipe it out instantly, or a rain could just flatten it out. But it has to be built on a sound structure of the substance of spirit. Because spirit is the only substance, that means everything else is a fake. Matter is a fake. Money, property, anything tangible cannot be the foundation of anything real. For reality is invisible. Reality is the qualities. I knew a practitioner for many years. She's no longer with us, but her main theme was qualities, qualities. All are qualities. I happened to be in her home with her and her husband one time, and they had the Olympics on when I arrived, Summer Olympics. And after she answered the door and I entered, there was a gymnast that was performing that we watched together, the three of us. And she made the comment during the performance, "Look at the grace that this individual is exhibiting." So she was automatically translating what was visible to the invisible quality that was responsible for the performance. The quality of grace. This individual had mastered grace in the smoothness of what she was doing as entertainment for the pleasure of the audience. She was giving. She obviously was not there to take. She was there to give a perfect performance. In a foot race, the superior coach will tell the individual to run his race, not run the race of someone else on the track. In other words, focus on the perfect standard, the principle of foot racing. And it's not to beat the competition. It's not to win a certain amount of recognition or a certain amount of money or, you know, a gold medal or a blue ribbon. That's not the purpose. The purpose should not be to be winning in competition against others. The purpose should be win against the mesmerism that tries to prevent success. And this reverts back to the work of the Seed Project, where it was discovered that the so-called human mind has built in defenses to prevent change. It took an extended period of time for one to run the 1 mile in less than 4 minutes. Lie upon lie had been published that could not be broken, that the human was not capable of exceeding the speed necessary that would break the barrier of the 4-minute mile. And once Roger Bannister overcame that mesmerism, he broke the record and was able to run the 1 mile in less than 4 minutes. And one might think that that record would last forever, because all through recorded history, no one had ever accomplished running the mile in less than 4 minutes. One might think that record would last for a long time, but he broke the belief of the limitation. And his record lasted only 46 days. It's recorded that he spent very little time training, but he had a system that was to have other people provide the pacing. He got the encouragement to do this only 2 years before, and he broke a record for the 15-meter race in his country. And he didn't even win. He came in fourth, but he broke the record in it for his country. And that gave him the encouragement to continue to see if he could perform a better standard on the principle than what had been adhered to previously. Bicknell Young was very successful as a Christian Science practitioner. In fact, he was called the Dean of Practitioners by a lot of people that were aware of his success. And he said that people would come to him wanting healing in their business. They were, you know, the business just wasn't successful, and they wanted it to be healed. And the amazing thing about it is they didn't know their business. When he would question them about their business, they didn't know the principle of operating their own business. Whatever the business was in, that was a common problem that he found with people that were seeking healing in their business. Divine principle operates invisibly, but the manifestation of it is visible. And if we're not seeing the manifestation of it, and we're in a business that is intended to be wholesome, if it produces a product or a service, whatever it is, it's a one that is deemed to be to the benefit of humanity, and our goal shouldn't be on the amount of money that's going to be earned or the number of assets that can be purchased from the results of the business. But it needs to be like Solomon. He asked God for guidance so that he could govern his people fairly. That was his primary first goal. The end result was, because he was not seeking monetary things or visible things, but judgment, how to judge his people or how to judge the event or the circumstance fairly so he could make a wise decision that was fair to the people, then he ended up being the wealthiest man. And I believe even in today's terms, no one is able to have the wealth that was bestowed upon Solomon. And Solomon's father, King David, doesn't appear to have ever had the goal of wealth as measured in material terms. Certainly he couldn't have had that as a goal when he slew Goliath or the lion that was attacking his sheep when he was a shepherd. President Trump has built a very fine organization with premium properties all over the world. His hotels consistently receive the reward that is the top award, which is provided by the vote of the people that are customers at his hotels. They are the ones that decide who gets the reward. And consistently, his hotels get the very top reward, and his golf courses. He wrote a book about this, The Art of the Deal, and he stated that if he would have been thinking about the money that would have been gained from accomplishing a certain project that he was working on, he was sure that it would fail. He says you cannot think about the money that is going to come as a result of the effort, the success of the project. And that's why he named the book The Art of the Deal. It's not the art of getting money, it's the art of the deal. In other words, the principle that applies to that particular project must be applied meticulously without any variance, must be monitored in a very precise way. His father, who was a successful builder, after the men would go home in building a new project, they would be working on it for the day. It would be in process. He would go around picking up the loose little things like nails or small pieces of wood. He would spend his day picking up what the workers were ignoring or wasting. The city of New York, a few decades back, I think it was around maybe 20 years or so, was in a mess, a total mess. The crime was a major problem. The mafia was running wild. There was no order. The streets were not safe to be out on, day or night. It had gotten really terrible. A fellow by the name of Rudy Giuliani became mayor. Everybody was so fed up with what had been going on that they brought in a brand new person. And Rudy brought in a man by the name of Bernie Kerik to be his police commissioner. The title of this recording is Accountable Action versus Inaction. The title seems simple enough, and it was stated in the beginning that even though that's the case, the execution is very likely to not be easy. The combination of Rudy as the mayor and Bernie as the police commissioner took a city that was in ruin, And in a short time, they were able to get rid of the mafia. The crime dropped to historic lows. And people were extremely happy because they could walk out on the street day or night and be safe. How could that be accomplished? Bernie wrote a book about it because he was the one in charge of the police force. And the theme of the book is, if there is no accountability, it will not get done. They had to work as a team. You could have the best police force, but if it wasn't supported by a legal system that would bring justice to those who needed to be disciplined, it would be a waste. That's exactly why law enforcement today is such a mess. There is no justice. Bernie set up a system whereby everyone was accountable for a standard and for their actions and for the actions of those who reported to them. So obviously, this accountability had to filter down to the lowest level. The cop walking a beat on the street had to be accountable for the area that he was responsible for during his period on duty for that day or night. And everyone up the ladder had accountability. If one is not accountable, it doesn't get done. Whatever system is used, whatever structure, principle is deemed to be the primary term for system and structure. And with system and structure, you automatically yield balance and harmony. But without love, that doesn't work. For love is the term that represents plan and design. And of course, as everyone knows, qualities on a human level are things such as consideration, thoughtfulness, caring. It's the mother quality of nurturing. What does one need to nurture? And they don't need to be a so-called female. Anyone that wants success needs to have love qualities as a part of their overall makeup. They have to be nurturing whatever it is that is the topic. As was stated, Bicknell Young stated that not only people did not know their business, but they didn't know how to conduct it at all. They didn't even seem to know the elements. Accountability has to be at all levels. And the accountability should be to the principle of whatever the topic is. And that principle needs to be a tributary of divine principle. Just as love is the motherhood quality of completeness, life, which is the fifth quality of development, represents fatherhood. So what brings life to the project? That's the qualities of life, the fatherhood qualities. In other words, we must be living the qualities of God. We must bring them to life in our experience. And particularly, for the purpose of this recording, bring it to the project at hand. We have to have the mind, the spirit, the soul, the principle. We have to bring them to life in whatever it is that we're focusing on. The sixth quality is truth, and that means consciousness. That means the motive. In fact, that goes very well with our topic of this recording, which is accountability, because truth is like the standard that we're looking to for our conduct. The truth. Are we letting the truth govern or error? Are we going to be based on a lie? Are we going to base our activities on a lie or on the truth? Is our motive going to be like President Trump? The art of the deal? Or like someone that is after the money? Like in that movie that Tom Cruise played, he said, "Show me the money." Or as a matter of fact, the Internal Revenue Service just had an announcement by their director. Extremely aggressive. It says, "The money is ours. You've got to go get it." Didn't talk about service to the people that are paying their salaries, which is the population. He said he made the laws. Our motive has to be correct if we want to have anything that is lasting. With today's technology, it is so easy to think and utilize a system. There are databases, there are spreadsheets, there are text documents that one can make a list and print out and remind themselves, or view it on the computer screen or on their cell phone. In the Bible, it refers to something that's very important, that one should write it on their forehead. I think what they're saying is that it needs to be like a note that is dangling down from their forehead in front of their eyes so that they can't forget it. I think it says to write it on your doorway. People that want to capture a thought that comes to them unexpectedly, they keep a way to record it. Of course, now it's primarily with cell phones that the people live with. And by live with, I mean they keep it with them all the time, everywhere. But in any event, they used to keep a notepad next to their bed or in the restroom, maybe in the kitchen, whatever. The point is, there needs to be a system that one develops for themselves, that works for themselves, that makes them accountable. And we can't just rely on a so-called human memory. Laura Sargent, one of the closest assistants to Mary Baker Eddy when she was living at Pleasant View and then at Chestnut Hill. Mary Baker Eddy asked Laura, she said, "Do you sometimes forget?" And Laura responded by saying, "Mind never forgets." And of course, she was referring to divine mind. So I believe that was a reminder by Mary Baker Eddy that we need to be reminding ourselves that mind is all intelligent, all knowing, and all wise. So mind knows. It doesn't have to remember, it knows. It is the source of the knowing. If one misplaces something, it could be in their home, their office, anywhere, on a camping trip. If they yield to that fact that divine mind is omnipresent and divine mind is all-knowing, and therefore nothing can be lost, nothing can be misplaced, divine principle is always operating, everything is always in order, everything is always in place, the system and structure doesn't fail, the plan and design of love doesn't fail, the knowing of mind doesn't fail, for these are all facts. These are all facts. They're not theory. And if one thinks along that line, chances will be improved, and maybe to 100% to solve the problem, depending on how genuine one is in their thoughts about this. And we must let the rule of compound interest or compounding be a benefit to us. The Bible says, here a little, there a little. So don't try to accomplish walking on water the first day . We need to take the little opportunities and demonstrate those and let them compound one upon another, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. As a final thought on this, we must think of the opposite of what accountability is, and that is that whatever action we take, if it is not accountable, if it is not accountable, then it's really not action at all. It's inaction. It's an absence of action. Oh, we might be busy doing something, but if we're not accountable for what we're doing, then it's going to be chaotic. There has to be accountability. There has to be a standard. There has to be a discipline. There has to be a structure and system. It has to be with a plan and design. The execution has to be with love. The nurturing. God is all in all. God gives us every idea that is needed. No one is ever confronted with a challenge or a conflict of any kind that one is not capable of seeing it through to complete resolution and success. The capability of man is the capability of God. For as Genesis states, man is made in the image and likeness of God. Man is the image, not the creator, but the image of God. There's one control, and it's mind, divine mind. not the oxymoron termed mortal mind. The one mind is in control. And no one has a number larger than one. One means each one of us. And that number is too small to do something great. But if we're accountable, then we're on the side of God. And when we work with our fellow beings, then we have unity. And everything that is needed can be accomplished. Mary Baker Eddy stated that if she only had a few that were working together in harmony and unity, then everything could be accomplished that needed to be accomplished. And the law of compounding would be in effect, for that would go out into the atmosphere and others would then get involved. The worldwide corruption seems to be so predominant. Corruption everywhere you look. Every department. Seems like every business. Certainly the big ones. Corruption. Top to bottom. They even developed a country or took over a country for the purpose of it being the center of the corruption. Of course, they advertise it as being the victim and the leader of the country, supposedly, is an actor, not anyone that knows anything about business, but someone that will act out the part of what they're told to do. I won't give you the names, but it's obvious if one really thinks about what is going on, what that country's name is and what that individual's name is that's supposed to be the leader. And it's the opposite of what is advertised. Because that's exactly how, quote, mortal mind operates. It tries to mock truth. The challenge today is bigger than in our lifetimes. And it's at the maximum point right now where there seems to be absolutely no accountability, no law and order. The worst criminals get by without even being held responsible, period. And the innocent ones are persecuted to the maximum, many of them to death. There was ever a time in our lives that we need to be sincere about our mental accountability. What are we letting our thoughts absorb? What are we accepting as truth? What is published in newspapers? Or messages sent to your cell phone, through news channels, cable channels, the videos. What is really truth? Trace it back to the origin. Are they talking about unity or division? Are they trying to give identity to each individual or take their identity away? Are they trying to give freedom for the people to think for themselves? Are they trying to say, oh, we'll solve your problem, we'll do your thinking for you? You don't need any property. You'll own nothing and be happy. Because you'll be so ignorant and you'll be in such chaos that you will give up. Do we want to give up our independence, our freedom? Mary Baker Eddy stated that there was not another country in the world where Christian Science could have been discovered, let alone founded and proliferate as the seed for the world. America was the only place it could have happened, as she has clearly stated. And now, where are we as America? Corruption everywhere. The old joke is that we used to think of a used car salesman as being the lowest character there were. Out of all of them, that's it. That's the lowest of the whole group. Couldn't be anything worse than a used car salesman. And then the professions, one by one, have been brought to a level below what was thought of as the used car salesman. All departments of government are now thought of by the average citizen to have no ethics, no morals. There's no accountability. That's the problem. No accountability. If we don't have a rule of law, we don't have accountability, then we have nothing. And the one that needs to be the head that we are accountable to is the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. God is all in all, but it doesn't mean anything if we're not accountable to God, to these qualities that are represented by these seven synonymous terms. Because we're not looking through the lens of spirit, we can't even see truth. We can't even recognize truth from error. We have to start with ourselves, our own thought, because our own thought controls our atmosphere. And as we project that out into the atmosphere of thought, it becomes a positive influence that affects everyone. It's there for the benefit of all humanity. We have to do our part. We have to be the little grain of sand that by ourselves cannot achieve greatness. But little by little, one by one, the grain of sand or the drop of water combines with others that are one by one. And then the compounding begins. So we have to be responsible for ourselves. We have to be accountable ourselves for every thought, speech, and action to be in compliance with the one and only God there is, which is the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Amen.